surprise flash edition of Serbian Corner. What is up, everybody, and welcome into Serbian Corner, the weekend edition of DNVR Nuggets podcast. I am not Vojislav. Vojislav is en route to the United States. He had to stay back, as everybody knows, for an extended stay in the motherland. But he is headed back to the U.S. now. So replacing him for this week is myself, but I'm joined, as always, by the star of the show, Miroslav Chuk. Miroslav, how are you doing today?
Excellent, excellent. My back is a bit sore because I just came back from my pickup game. I pulled Michael Porter today, but hopefully I will be fine for the next Saturday.
Pulled a Michael Porter, man. I can't believe it. You might have crossed the line. You went too far, Miroslav.
Yeah,
too
sorry.
Far. Man, I'll tell you what. So appreciate everybody that's here in the chat. We had to start a little bit earlier here. I got a date. Miroslav.
With you.
The old wife booked a date, so I'm excited for that. So we went a little bit early here, but we have some things to talk about. It's a bummer. Now, I know you guys do this for the Nuggets Serbia podcast, but when there's a show following just like a loss that stings, it's almost like you almost dread it at parts where you're like, oh man, we got to like rinse that taste out of everybody's mouth first before we get into some of the fun stuff. Is that how you feel today?
Usually when I do the Nugget Serbia podcast, the crowd is even more hurt by the bad loss than I would say the average worldwide audience. So we actually enjoy in rinsing everybody from the shame of defeat and saying, come on guys, it's an 82 season game. Let's be really down when we fall out of the playoffs. But you know, before that happens, there's not enough reasons to be that sour about things. So we're trying to find the silver linings, and you know, there are maybe four or six weeks away from us, so we're concentrating on the good stuff.
It is funny though. I'm watching the standings, and I look up and I see Phoenix that has 9 losses, and I keep thinking 9 times this season they felt bad. That's not very much. That's like 35 times they felt good, 9 times they felt bad. And I'm sitting there watching. I'm like, Denver, it really is every other game. It's 50-50 that you either feel good or feel bad. So that is sports. You know, that is that's what makes Nuggets fans different than Lakers fans. Lakers fans are miserable right now because they've never experienced this. They're like, what is this? Things aren't going exactly the way they were ordained. So about last night's game, you know, there's a lot of discussion. I'll be honest, the online Nuggets conversation has not been great the last 24 hours. They've been very, very touchy. And that is, you know, you know me, Miroslav, I don't like to pin anything on any one player. I feel like the alt basketball just doesn't work that way. Right now, though, you know, Faku is he's in such a rut and teams are guarding him differently. And I feel like it's almost affecting him. Like, he's not as bad of a shooter as he's been over these last few games, but kind of sees the writing on the wall. Everybody thinks he's bad, and now all of a sudden he's living into it. What are you seeing from Faku this season, but really over the last, I don't know, 3 weeks or so?
He is a bit in his head for sure. I mean, he was shooting 40% for 3 last playoffs.
Right.
It's not such a small sample. It was like, what was it? How many? 6, 10 games. Not a small sample on a really high intensity games. I know he can hit those shots, but it wasn't just him. If you remember the game against Utah, the whole team was completely out of the shooting groove because they were on the back to back, and you know, somehow Jokic is the only one that is not on back to back. Everybody else is, but that is how it goes with superstars and the other guys. So about Faku, I was listening to Matt Moore's Locked On Nuggets show for today, and he spent like good 20 minutes talking about why Faku is the bad grape on the Nuggets roster right now. And I understand him because Matt Moore is a really great analyst. He is really, really, he has a really good perspective. He has a lot of basketball knowledge, and he based that on numbers. He crushes every day, and on video, he crushes every day. Thing about him is, like most American analysts, he never saw Faku play outside of the NBA. And this is why I said this like 16 months ago when Faku first came to the Nuggets on your show. I said, listen, guys, this is a true legend of FIBA basketball. This guy single-handedly beat the dream team from Serbia, the team that had all the stars from Serbia except from Miloš Teodosic. Only 3 years, 2.5 years ago, he had Luis Scola and nobody else on the team, and he went all the way to the finals of the World Cup. Faku Campazzo really is a world-class player, and he is a player who is worthy of building around him. Problem is, Nuggets don't have the time to do it. Mm. Nuggets don't have the roster around him for him to be effective. He doesn't have big wings next to him. He doesn't have a rim-rolling center next to him. All those things he needs to completely shine, to show his skill on a daily basis, not only against bad teams, but against every kind of teams. I really firmly believe Faku Campazzo can be a starter in the NBA for like 10 different teams.
Mm.
But it's really hard with this kind of balance on the roster Nuggets have, unless they like bring two new guys out of nowhere. I just think he doesn't work with the bench anymore.
Yeah, so there's a lot there, and it's interesting. Here's where I'm gonna agree with you in a large part of this, and disagree in a small part. So I think there's no question right now that Faku does not fit with the ingredients that the Nuggets can play him with, right? Yeah. And at the moment, and one of the things that I think works most against you is with Jokic. Now, what you're kind of indicating is Jokic is also not necessarily a Faku player. Like, you need somebody to put a lob pressure,
that's right,
on the rim, and maybe there's a bit of a redundancy of talents there that take away from Faku. So I could see that, even though Jokic has made almost every type of player work with him, almost every type. So that's a real big mark against Faku. Where I disagree with you, though, is when you're saying he's worthy of building around. I'm curious. That's the part I'm curious about, because I think you're right that if you gave him JaVale McGee or, you know, Jared Allen or something, and then you gave him a couple floor spacing, you know, length with some shooting around him, could you have something there? Like, yeah, I think actually that would work really well. But the question is, should a team design their roster around him like that? That's the part that I'm not sure. I'm not sure any team says, ooh, Faku, we're going to build a second unit around him. But what I will say is I'm starting to look at the front office's thought process coming into this year, and you see how it's played out, and you think, yeah, how did they think that was going to work with Faku and just really no spacing, no rim roller, this or that? And it really is like he is being put in the worst version of himself. So where we agree is that I don't think Faku is a hopeless NBA player, the way Matt Moore, you know, my colleague at Locked On Nuggets, it really argues for. But I do think he is hopeless in this situation. And where you and I disagree is I don't think he's good enough to warrant you bending. Like, there's a lot of players out there that could be good if you set the deck perfectly for him, but very few players warrant you actually doing that.
Yeah, I agree. He didn't prove it in the NBA I'm concentrating on the rest of his career. He's 30. He played for 29 years outside of the NBA before he came there. So yeah, I know. And I understand that, but it's just a shame. He deserves so much better, and he doesn't deserve, you know, the shame he's being put through by a lot of outlets. Because first of all, it's not his fault that he's playing as many minutes as I mentioned last week.
Right, right.
He shouldn't be playing that many minutes. He should be playing in shorter spurts. He should be changing the tempo of the game. He should be destructive against another team's offense in short spurts. But if you try to rely on him, you know, what's that three guard lineup of him and Bones?
I can't believe it, but with Bryn Forbes and
Bryn Forbes. Bones Highland, what was that?
Like, oh my
what
God.
Was that?
I was so shocked that we saw it, like just beyond shocked that that's where you went. I mean, you're right. The table was not set for him to have a good, you know, a good game last night, but you know, the numbers are what they are at this point. He is one of, I think now one of the 15 worst plus minus players in the NBA, which is pretty jarring when you consider the Nuggets have an above 500 record at the moment, but I am with you. So do you think if Faku stays in the NBA next year, which I have no idea, you would not be surprised if he landed in a situation that more fit his skill set, and all of a sudden, you know, he actually looks pretty good.
Yeah, for sure. There are many of rim rolling centers in the league in the second units.
Type of center is a rim roller.
Yeah. That's right. Yeah, I think we could see him making like 7 alley oops per match, or maybe not 7, right. 5 alley oops per match, something like that. He deserves better. That's what I want to say.
It's interesting. I don't know the question now. I'm less interested in this idea about like where he exists in a vacuum. Is he a good or bad player? Like, I'm more interested in what does Denver do going forward? And that's a really tricky one because I don't know, you know, with I understand Malone's thought process. There's still only two point guards on this roster. There's Monte Morris, there's Facu Campazzo. Malone, of all people, does not want to play on principle a lineup without a point guard. And I understand his principle on that. I think it's a good principle. The question now becomes, is it worth the risk to go out there with no floor general, no true point guard, no true ball handler? Is it worth that risk just because you see some of the weaknesses here? The other thing I wonder about Faku is, and I think it's definitely true again of this situation he's in, but I also wonder how it extrapolates even if he is in the perfect situation, is I feel like teams have a great scout on him right now. Because it's not just the shooting. The shooting is the part that's in his head. But it's really, there was a play yesterday, this will probably make the list. He comes off of a double stagger screen and curls towards the rim, and nobody moves. The defense is just like, yeah, you're not going to the rim. We know that. Yeah. So, yeah. And those are the ones that I wonder if that's the scout now, is let him get to the paint. Let him get in there, because don't collapse, because that's what he wants. And if that's the case, that's the part that worries me. But you know, we'll see what Denver does. We'll see what they do going forward. I mean, Malone has an interesting quandary on his hands. My suspicion is Faku will continue to play a lot of minutes, and Malone will continue to move the pieces around him, meaning maybe try Davon Reed and Austin Rivers this next game rather than try a lineup without Faku. Is that what you kind of predict?
You see, I kind of like the Bryn Forbes addition in a vacuum, because he is an elite shooter and Denver definitely needs shooting. I have to agree with Dave DeFour, who said, what do you expect from Bryn except getting open shots? Thing is, I don't think he can get a lot of open shots on the second unit.
Right.
That will be a problem. Nobody can create an open shot for Bryn Forbes, and he will have those 4 of 13 nights again because of that. And I have a really, really hot take idea of moving Bryn Forbes to the starting lineup and moving Monte Morris to the bench. Trying to completely gamble with Will Barton and Jokic and AG as your point guards and move Monte to have a real floor general on the bench. But there would still need to be another trade involved there to get somebody bigger, because Monte is not helping with size.
So I don't know how you want to do this today, Miroslav, because I know that was number one on your docket with some Bryn Forbes. Is this the Burek? Is this how we're opening up, or are we going to throw that out for the week?
Yeah, we can call it. I don't care. It's not important.
We might have to throw it out for the week since I'm doing double duty of hosting and producing. But yeah. Okay, so that is a hot take. Bryn Forbes in the starting lineup.
It's just not because he doesn't make any sense on the bench lineup at this point.
Here's an interesting take. Is it possible that Bryn Forbes just doesn't make any sense? Maybe he makes sense when, you know, the full roster is complete, you know, and that's when you'll start to see more minutes, or mixing up the starters is dangerous.
Yeah. Well, when everybody is back, then you can put him on the bench with Monte and with Michael Porter, I guess. Right. I don't think Michael Porter should get back to the starting lineup with the worries we have with him. So with Monte and Bryn and Michael Porter and I don't know, J. Mike, whoever. I think that works. That really works, because you have two extreme threats from the outside, and the collapse will be much easier in that situation. But right now, for these 14 games we have until the All-Star break, I would experiment a bit. At least try it against Detroit or something, somebody like that. Just try to see how it looks like. Because if Bryn Forbes is your fifth option on the offense and he's just shooting 48% for three, like a fifth option, you can probably live with his defense. I was keying on his defense last night. And I have to say, it wasn't terrible. It wasn't great, but he had some deflections that resulted in steals. Even I know he's not guarding anybody really, but he had some lapses at the beginning. But I'm pretty sure he had no idea what he was supposed to do.
Yeah, there was a lot of like looking around and asking guys, yeah. Like, is that me? Yeah. Is that him? Like, what? Yeah.
Yeah, that's right. But at one point, I thought he even find some groove on defense, really. So I would experiment. I mean, it's easy for me. It's not my job on the line.
Eric's calling me out here. It's hard. I'm doing double D. Why aren't you producing, Eric? What's going on here? Come on, man. Bryn Forbes, it is tough, man, because I look at this and I go, Bones Highland scares me in a playoff series. He scares me because he reminds me a lot of Michael Porter's rookie season, where it's like, you're going to get into a playoff series. Teams are going to be like, here's our game plan. We're going to go at this guy. And it's going to really, because his bad moments are really, really bad. But Denver does need, unlike Bryn Forbes, and even Monte Morse can do this in the pick and roll, put pressure on the rim. But Bones Highland has that ability to get by his man without an advantage. Just, hey, I just dribbled past him. And I don't know that Monte has that ability. Like, he needs the pick and roll. He needs sort of these plays. So I look at that and I go, Bryn Forbes is probably taking Bones Highland's minutes. That's your, if you get to your final form with Monte off the bench, now it comes down to who's the shooting guard, and you have to decide, yeah. Is it Bones? Is it Rivers? Is it Bryn? And that's where I get a little bit worried, because Bryn Forbes can shoot and is probably a more reliable shooter. But one, Bones is a more important part of the long-term operation. And two, he does some things that he can't. So I'm a little conflicted about what Denver's going. I wonder if Bryn Forbes now, after watching last night, I wonder if it almost complicates things, not eases the pressure.
It's also a possibility that they will try him for 10 games, and then they can just flip him again because he came alone in a trade. I don't think there is a 30-day mandatory wait for him to be traded again. I might be wrong on that. Mm. But, you know, he's a salary. He's a $4.5 million. You also have Faku on a $4 million, something like that. You have Zeke on a rookie scale. So it's possible we will be seeing another move. But what if Bryn works? I was looking a bit at his numbers last season in Milwaukee, because this season he's playing for San Antonio, and he was playing for San Antonio. That's not going anywhere.
Right.
And last season, Milwaukee was a good team. And, you know, Giannis is a big playmaker. It's not the same kind of playmaker like Jokic, but there are some similarities there. And he had some really, really great numbers. If we look at the types of possessions he had, he was, of course, really great as a spot-up shooter. He had something like 180 possessions, 93 percentile. Really, really great. He shot 45% on 5 attempts, but only on 18 minutes, so that's like 9 attempts per 36, which is awesome. That's been done like 3 times in history.
Right.
It was JJ Redick, Steph Curry, and also Steve Novak, my crush from NBA 2K back in 2011, Steve Novak.
He was a great shooter. He had such a balanced shot.
Oh, yeah. I love that guy. And then he also was really good on handoffs. Admittedly, only on like 2 handoffs per game, but he was 88 percentile on handoffs. Now, granted, that's also, you know, kind of spot ups. You know, he takes the ball in the handoff and shoot, but still 88 percentile. That's great. Interestingly enough, on only 44 possessions, which is like once every 2 games, he was a pick and roll ball handler.
Now, this is extremely small amount, and that could be really a blimp on the statistical sky. But he was 96th percentile as a pick and roll ball handler. I don't know. Everybody says he doesn't handle the ball at all.
Right.
I don't know. Maybe we can see him as a tertiary creator. Right. If you have a Monte to Jokic, pick and roll doesn't work. AG to Jokic doesn't work. Try with Brin, see what happens. Who knows? If it would work on a small sample, I can even see Brin being re-signed next season. I mean, if it works, if it's effective, because he has that $4.5 million salary that could be increased by 20% or something like that next season. Denver cannot afford anybody more than on a minimum deal. So that could be a interesting salary filler for the future.
It's such an interesting thought. When you talk about tertiary ball handler, I'd actually look at it this way. I don't think a Bryn Forbes Jokic pick and roll is going to create the advantage you want. But I do wonder if, you know, a Jamal Murray Jokic pick and roll obviously creates half steps and full step advantages. And then you swing it to him. Can he turn that into an immediate second pick and roll? And you're already starting with a half step or full step advantage. And now he capitalizes on it. And I think that's where it is. So it's less about the first pick and roll didn't work. Let's try one with Bryn Forbes.
Yeah.
And more about the first pick and roll did work. The defense is scrambled. And now you just run that handoff and the defense has to go under because they're so far behind. And now he hits that one. So I think that's in theory how it works. The question is just, here's actually the real question. I think the Denver Nuggets right now have a lot of utility players that have value and extreme weaknesses, including Bryn Forbes, who can't guard anyone and is really small.
Yeah.
Malone, this has been, in my opinion, maybe his worst trait when you talk about what is he, you know, good or bad at. If you don't give him a clear, this is the rotation, these are the guys, this is what you do, but instead of fill it out, what does this game call for? I just feel like he's really bad at that. And so now it's, is this a Davon Reed game or not? Is this a Faku game or not? Is this a Bryn Forbes game or not? Is this a Bones Highland game or not? He now has to balance all of those. And I think he does a poor job on that when there's one decision there, but now you have to decide a combo between four or five guys that may or may not play on any given night. Oh, by the way, DeMarcus Cousins as well. And I just, that worries me. That really worries me for Michael Malone. So that would be my concern, but let's move on. Cause I want to talk about, that's the more immediate reaction to what just happened. But you sent me a list of things that you wanted to talk about today. And I want to get into those, including, and this is Miroslav's words here, a marriage-like chemistry between Aaron Gordon and Nikola Jokic. They're so good. They're like a married couple together, Miroslav. You've been very early on the Aaron Gordon is a great fit with Jokic after watching him play. Why do you think that they have this marriage-like chemistry?
Yeah, well, it's time for kind of a dad joke to begin with.
Let's go.
So I feel like those two are a long tenured couple that rescues each other in uncomfortable situations. Like, for instance, if you and your wife are hanging out with parents of kids, your kids going to school with, and one of you start some kind of conversation that is not pleasant to other people because, you know, you don't know them or whatever, the other one immediately jumps and change the subject or move it to the comical situation, something like that. Right. This is what Nikola and Aaron Gordon do right now, because there are some really, really organic situations I can see. Like against the Clippers, there was this fast break when there was Jokic to AG, AG to Jokic, Jokic to AG, AG back to Jokic, four passes.
You're right.
You don't see that in the NBA.
Yeah.
I only saw that in like European national teams when the guys played together for 10 years and know exactly how each other breed. That's really a great thing. Or maybe, yes, of course, the game winner when Jokic chose Aaron Gordon as the finisher. He was not the best shooter on the team at that particular moment, but he trusted Aaron Gordon, not Barton, not Monte. He chose Aaron Gordon as the best option. And he was right. He was right. It's really organic between those two. Sometimes Aaron Gordon would just cut at full speed, 100% speed, to the paint, and Jokic will just find him on that cut, and that turns into explosion on the rim.
Right.
you need such trust between the guys to do that. I mean, they will never be as little as Jokic and Murray just because, you know, the difference of the positions on right. the court. Of course, Jamal Murray is a great clutch player, yada, yada. But, you know, Aaron Gordon is a three slash four. And when they do a switch on a pick and roll, there is never as big of a advantage achieved like with a guard. But I'm really, really loving what I see from them, and I hope it will grow even further. So imagine if Jamal returns to like 90% of the shape for the playoffs and they just do one pick and roll with Jamal, one pick and roll with AG. It doesn't have to be a pick and roll. It can be whatever with AG, because we've seen so many different actions between those two. That could really, really mess up the defenses on the other side. And I'm really excited about that. I really am.
The play you're talking about, the give and go on the break, yeah. it's a bummer that didn't get more shine. I mean, by me, I'm saying like that's a bummer for me that we didn't give yeah. it, because that really was, you're right, that was a great play. That was a unique play. Like, those are the type of plays where you're like, man, beautiful. Like, beautiful. Two very unselfish players. By the way, AG had a pass last night, too, that was a skip to the corner to AG, and then he quickly That's right. threw it into Jeff Green. And you look at that and you go, man, what a great Jokic player. A guy that doesn't – that sees the next play and can make the pass, like, real quickly. So I'm with you. I really like Aaron Gordon way more than I expected to like him. I just love his game. I think Jokic, I'm really curious what Jokic says, because he doesn't really ever shout him out, but you do see those moments like that where there's just such great chemistry. And I think, man, those guys are going to be so good. And in particular, they're going to be so good once you add a little bit more floor spacing in Jamal and Michael Porter. And I think AG is just really learning how to capitalize on playing with Jokic, that when the spate court opens up, I think he's going to feast. I really do.
Yeah, I don't remember Jokic speaking much about Jamal Murray as well before the bubble and everything. He was kind of choosing, you know, the Jermichael Greens of the world and, right. and other guys to
right.
to Faku. I don't know. Some guys he likes to lift up. I guess he feels that Aaron Gordon is on a high enough level right now that he doesn't need to do anything more outside of the court. They're really, really clicking well. And you add Jeff Green to that as well. Jeff Green is also a Jokic player. And that's really, you just give him veterans, man. I don't know. Give him a crazy athletic, smart veterans like Jeff Green. And
right.
And it's just a
George Karl influencing you, isn't he?
Yeah, he is.
He has been me too, because I look at this and, you know, especially 3-4 years ago, I always loved the upside and you got to play these guys and like, what can young players do? The more you watch Jokic really blossom like this and the more you get into it, you're like, Jokic just needs like 7 Jeff Greens. Like, Jeff Green's good. Jeff Green's not awesome. He's just good and he knows what to do. And I'm like, if Jokic has had 7 guys that know what to do, I don't care if they're good or bad. He's going to crush with them. And I do. The George Karl has really like influenced my perspective. That's part of why I love talking, obviously, to the legendary coach. But Aaron Gordon, and I love your point about Jamal Murray, because you're right. When Jokic said, "I truly believe Murray is a superstar in the bubble," I remember being blown away, because I was like, yeah. I've never heard him rave about Jamal before. Like, I know he liked him, but I'd never heard him like really stick up for him. And it came out of nowhere and was the biggest compliment you could give. And I'm like, okay, so maybe he does feel the same way with Aaron Gordon. He's just withholding.
Yeah. Maybe he's just waiting for the right time to do it. Like after they win in 7 games against Utah this season.
Yeah. It's also funny because I remember in the preseason, and this shows you how much Aaron Gordon has grown as a Jokic player, but I remember in the preseason a pick and roll where Aaron Gordon didn't roll and Jokic jumped and threw the pass to where he was supposed to be, and it turned out to a turnover. And I remember Jokic being so frustrated. You could see him be like, ah, like he was so mad at Aaron Gordon. So I wonder if it started from that place and now it's here. And look, Jokic is funny. One thing I will say about Jokic, he is, I think, slow to compliment people. You know what I mean? Like, he's a bit of a tough love guy in that way. And that's what makes it perhaps so much more meaningful when he actually does call a guy out like a Jermichael Green or like a Murray. You're like, man, he must really love that dude that he said literally anything positive about him.
He speaks to media every day and it's really bothering him. So that's just some extra effort he needs to put in to compliment somebody. So
they really, really need to earn it. Yeah. So he will just say it, okay, from the bottom of my heart, I want to play with this guy forever for any reason.
Where do you think Aaron Gordon ranks on the chemistry scale? Let's do the chemistry scale with Jokic real quick. Number one, I think Jamal Murray.
Jamal, no question. I would put him on number two for sure.
Wow.
Number two, Aaron Gordon. Then I will put Monte. And yeah, after Monte,
this year in particular, it's just really cool. Those guys have a great. That's the thing about moving Monte to the bench is like Monte and Jokic really have a thing going right now.
It's really interesting. I was even thinking about starting with Jamal when he returns off the bench. Of course, you would be closing with Jamal, but imagine if Jamal gets in the game on the 6 minute mark and just destroy worlds completely fresh. This is something the Clippers used to do a lot before, with Trez Harrell and with Lou Williams as their de facto second and third best player playing off the bench. So it's really interesting. I don't know. I mean, Monte is a great floor general for the bench, but he really needs some bigger guys on the bench. And I have to be honest, the end game, last 3-4 minutes against Memphis, I should compliment Malone on those last 3-4 minutes because he actually didn't go small at the end like he usually does. He actually started closing with the starters, including Jeff Green, and then he changed Jeff Green with Zeke Nagy. And
he
He
fouled out, but yeah.
But he didn't put in a third guard. Tried to continue with a big one. So
right,
yeah. It we'll see some changes from Malone for sure. We'll do it. We'll see it.
Memphis has so many good shooters that sometimes I like to analyze this game because I love basketball and I like all the little pieces. And part of me just goes, maybe it is just shooting. Maybe the NBA has become so simplified that if you just have 5 shooters on the court, like it doesn't matter. Your margin for error is so wide that it doesn't matter. And Memphis went cold in the second half, so maybe there's just this limit on even if you have all good shooters, guys do just go cold. But when you watch that first half and Ja, like Jokic, this unstoppable player, and then the defense is so compromised that helping off of any of the other 4 players creates a wide open 3. Maybe basketball is that simple. I mean, in today's NBA, sometimes I sit here and I think that like when I watch Jeff Green make great screens and cuts and I'm like, that's awesome. And it's like, yeah, but Michael Porter makes 3s. That's way better.
Yeah. I miss that time, man. They look exactly like 18, 19, or was it 17, 18? What was the season they didn't qualify for the playoffs?
17-18.
Yeah, that was a great season. I have to be completely honest. I watched all the games, but I didn't care as much as like I do today. I wasn't emotionally invested in the team in 17-18 like I am now. When they would lose the game, I would look at the box score and Jokic had 22, 12 and 8 and okay. It's okay. They're building up. It's not their time yet, but they had that crazy stretch at the end of the season when I really felt okay, this might be their time. They might get to the playoffs and try to make some noise in the playoffs. Of course, in the first round, not more than that. And I missed that time, man, because that was so carefree. That was beautiful. Every win was so delightful, and every loss was okay. We'll get them next time. Come on, we're young and powerful. And if you remember that team, we had like 7 guys in double digits back then. Jokic was only scoring 20 points per game.
Right, right.
Jamal was scoring 18, and you had like 5 guys between 10 and 13.
Right,
and. You don't have the same similar thing with Memphis right now because you have 4 guys that score like 17 points per game or more. But that's because Dylan Brooks missed a lot of games and now he's catching up with the points per game. But that team, man, so many competent players.
Right.
And Nuggets used to have that. All of
they
them
will
was
again though. That's the thing is they.
Yeah.
Eventually, you're going to get to where you talk about guys that can really make an impact on any given game. It's going to be Jokic, Murray, MPJ, Gordon,
right.
Jeff Green, Barton, Monte. Like, they're eventually at a point where on any given night, you expect three or four of those guys to play well. Maybe not all of them, but the volume of players, you're like three or four of those guys are going to play well. And then all these other guys, your Fakus, your Rivers, your Bones, even if zero of those guys play well, you're like, it doesn't matter because there's still all these other guys to do so. So I am very hopeful about the Nuggets, what their final form is. And I was thinking about this last night with Faku's struggles. Jamal Murray really just needs to be better at 80% or whatever he comes back at than what Faku is right now, which is actually a pretty low bar if you think about it. Just yeah. Denver's unit they have so far has been very good. Their starting unit bench so bad. Can Murray just replace Faku and be 50% better, you know, than him? And I think it's very likely. And if you do that, games like last night, those are wins. Those aren't losses. So
that's right.
And Memphis is a good team. We got to keep it moving, though, because I want to hit some of these topics that you sent me here. What will the Nuggets record be at the All-Star break? So without prior to reinforcements, what are you thinking?
Yeah. So right now they are, let me see, 23 and 21. They have 14 more games before the All-Star break. And to tell you the truth, I did this analysis before the Memphis game, so I was a bit on the upswing right
now. Did you have a win at Memphis? A win against Memphis?
Yeah, I did. I did have it. I was certain they will get it.
Oh no!
And I was bummed about it. I mean, Memphis is really, really good, really good. But come on, man, we destroyed Lakers before that.
Yeah.
You know. I mean, we didn't destroy the Clippers like we should have,
right.
But you know, there were some silver linings from those games. And then you had the Utah game that was, you know, back to back,
right.
And nobody could hit anything. And that was the Jokic game when he said everybody knows they can shoot, right?
Correct.
He was correct. They shot like 4 of 33 from the 3-point line. I mean, what's up with that?
He was correct. That is right.
Every shot was short. They just didn't have their legs behind under them. So when I was analyzing this, I thought they will go 9-5 in these 14 games. And it's not an easy schedule because I think they will lose a game against the Nets on the back-to-back. They will lose against the Bucks in Milwaukee. They will lose against the Jazz, of course, on the back-to-back.
So lame. Then, so lame.
Then, listen, so listen, annoying. Man. Then again against the Nets on the back-to-back.
Oh, God.
So both games against the Nets on the back-to-back. And then against the Raptors on the back-to-back as well. So they have four back-to-back series in next 14 games.
Brooklyn is not a back-to-back the second time.
It's not?
No, they're a day off. They played New Orleans on the 4th. They played Brooklyn on the 6th.
I might have made that mistake. Okay. Still a lose. Still a loss. I don't know.
It's a tough game, yeah.
Yeah, it will be a tough one. But I do predict two good wins in this series, and that's the one against the Bucks at home.
Okay.
And then against the Warriors on the road just before the All-Star break.
Oh, okay.
I'm low on the Warriors.
They're really bad right now.
I'm really. You know what's their record without?
It's 4-7 or something like
4-7.
That.
4-7. Yeah. And you know what's their record when Steph hits three or less threes?
What is it?
6-6.
Yeah, but you know something, he does. That's only 12 games all year. He has like most of the time he does hit more than three. So
I agree. But he had some really horrid shooting nights, along with those great ones.
I'm so curious to see what games they rest Yoke. I would suspect, and I think they need to. I mean, look, they lost all their players last year. I'm not trying to like jinx this or curse or scare anyone, but they lost all of their guys last year at the part of the schedule that was unfair, where all of these games were happening in a short span, and they tried to plow through. And you start losing Barton, you lose Monte, you lose Murray, you lose. And to me, I look at that and I go, the Nuggets have that road trip where, by the way, road means you're not sleeping as much because you have these weird travel hours and all this or that. They have all of those games and back-to-back. So I think you got DeMarcus Cousins at Brooklyn on a back-to-back. Don't play Jokic that game. Just don't. You're probably not going to win anyway. And there's just no point. Give him 3 days off between the 25th and the 28th. Let him sit that one out. You play Utah. This one's tough because it's a divisional team. You play Utah on the second night of a back-to-back. Don't play him. Just don't play him. Like, you have to punt those games. Your odds of winning are low anyway. I know you don't want to come into this where you're punting, you know, where you get used to saying we're not trying. But I'm telling you, we're so close to Murray coming back. Don't lose another player that handicaps you right before that. And to me, I'm praying that the Nuggets have learned a lesson in the past years.
Would you be fine if they're 500 before the All-Star break?
Well, it's tough because I think they have the six-game road trip. By the end of that road trip, and actually, so when you say before the All-Star break happens February 16th is their last game. Yeah. They come back from that and have another 2 out of 3 on the road. To me, it's after that period that you look at and say, okay, then they're going to have like 5 more home games than road games to close out the year. So if they're 500, really sneaky, they're a little bit better. Would I be happy? No. But is it reasonable? I think, sadly, it probably is reasonable.
Yeah.
It's a bummer. No.
So mediocre.
Kafana Jokic. I don't know what this means. Kafana Jokic.
Yeah, Kafana is a bar / restaurant, you know.
Okay.
But it's the one, I don't know if you remember Jokic's picture like from last year when he just came to Sombor and you see a bottle of Yellen beer in front of him and a lot of cigarettes all around and the tablecloth that is like in squares, red and white square, something like that. So it's a very a foggy place.
Okay.
You know, usually have live music, but it's just a corner where we should speak about Jokic.
Oh, I got you. Okay, so that's what it is. So Jokic has 4 triple-doubles in a row. 3 of those were 30-point triple-doubles. This last one, it was a bummer because I bet on the 30-point triple-double. I came up short. He only had 26. A little too passive in the first quarter. But he's just in a triple-double streak right now. And really, he's had some real peaks. The first, like, 10 days of the season, Jokic was playing some of the best ball I've ever seen. But over this last 4 or 5 games, it's right back up there to that same level. And I think it coincides. Honestly, the season coincides with when Denver's first unit is healthy with Jeff Green and Aaron Gordon and Will Barton and Monte, Jokic's numbers have been through the roof. So my personal opinion is this Jokic we're seeing, he's here as long as that lineup is together. And then when Murray comes back, might even go up a whole other level.
Yeah, well, some of his numbers might drop, but they might be better because of it. Because, you know, he doesn't have to play all of those 4 quarters and such stuff. But this week, he was 29, 13, and 12 on 62, 50, 87 shooting splits. That's insanity. I know it's a four game stretch. It's not a big sample, you know.
Should have been player of the week, though. Right?
Yeah.
I mean, I don't know what LeBron did this week. I'll have to check, but, you know.
They were 2-2, so, yeah.
It always is tough.
I don't think he'll get a single player of the week this season for some reason. I mean, there is a reason because they're never 4-0 in a week or 3-0. You know, that would be
true
enough. So yeah, that's bad. But I don't know. I mean, they're 2-2 because they played Utah on the back to back. I'm not saying they would for sure win against them if the circumstances were normal, but you could have seen just they just couldn't hold up. You know, if they shot like 35% for the three on that match, that's an even matchup. So, yeah, it was a bummer. But I'm glad this week we saw Jokic meeting Baba.
Yeah,
that was a real highlight for me. Thanks to Molly Hunt, aka Molls Balls 84.
Well, it's funny you say this because, you know, Molly, when she did it, her thing was, how do we show Jokic that we love him and how much he means to us? And I honestly feel like mission accomplished, because when you saw the video of Katie Wingy showing him this, I genuinely think that was his response, is like, wow, these people get me. And the message was received. I am appreciated by this fan base.
Yeah, at the first moment when I saw that Molly's original tweet, I was like, what's this? I never heard of something like this. That sounds insane. Yeah. Why would somebody do that? But then when I saw how the idea moves along and that there is a therapy horse involved, a 1-year sponsorship in in honor of the greatest player in the basketball, I was blown away. And of course, yeah. his reaction was very logical. And I'm sure he will meet Baba eventually, yeah. but just he won't have any cameras around him for us to see that. But you know what's interesting? Baba in Serbian means grandmother. And I don't know about you, but my grandmother was a great, great person. She was always comforting me. So I'm pretty sure Baba will do a similar job in Denver area. I'm really glad this thing happened.
I am as well. Great job by Molly. And you know what's funny? When we were just talking about, you know, Jokic's triple doubles, four in a row right now, he didn't have triple doubles to start the season, if you recall. And I think part of this was because Michael Porter was basically turned into Faku for 10 games because he was injured. Like, he couldn't score. So if you cut out that stretch and you cut out the stretch where Will Barton was hurt or Monte Morris, like, there was another stretch where the starting unit was really bad. I mean, we had our old last year starting unit. So if you just count the minutes when I would say Jokic had a competent supporting cast in the starting lineup, he actually is getting a lot of triple-doubles. So that's why I wonder if triple-double Jokic is actually back. Not every game like it has been for four in a row, but again, just playing with guys that you have to be honest with, you know, the defense has to be honest with, maybe we're back up there to the 10 assists, because the assists are the thing he hasn't been getting, but maybe those are back. I don't know.
Interesting thing about it, if you look at the tally of his triple-doubles per seasons, the only season he didn't have any triple-doubles was his rookie season because he was playing on limited minutes. But then he had like 6 in his second year, then 10, then 12, 13, 16. And this season, I really feel he can hit that 20 mark because he's already at 11. He played in 39 games. He still has like 38 games left.
Right.
I really feel he can do it. I wonder what you think. Will it be harder for him to hit the triple doubles when everybody turns, or will it be easier?
Easier, so much easier. I really believe it, because you have to guard. Like, even when you just talk about Jamal Murray being back, who knows how many minutes? It's just one more shooter that people are going to be like, I can't help off of this guy. It's my job. I can't help off. So I think significantly easier. My only question with Jokic in that regard is, will he stay as aggressive as we have seen as a scorer? Because I honestly believe he does things different. He always sets the table first, takes over later. I really wonder when Murray comes back, if he can make life easy on Murray by taking over first so that the defense is double, 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 everybody, sending everybody. And then you go like, all right, Murray, you're going to get a lot of open shots right now because they're not leaving me open. And I think that would be the recipe for success. But we got to close up here, Miroslav, because I got to run or I'm going to get divorced.
Yeah.
But last week we missed out on this and I want to bring it up. There is a Serbian basketball legend I want to learn about here. From Sombor, and it's not Nikola Jokic.
Yes. So in today's fact of the week, Serbian fact of the week, I'll tell you a story about the first basketball superstar born in Sombor, Serbia in 1938. His name was Radivoj Korać. His nickname was Žučko, which means ginger. And on the color photo, you will see why. Yeah, so maybe you can see why he was called
that
ginger.
Uniform is. My goodness.
Oh, yeah. Very tight. He played
like
in the
Andre the Giant or something, like a wrestler. You know, like a wrestler.
He played in the 60s. Come on. That was very normal 60 years ago. So he played for 15 seasons, first 13 of them for OKK Belgrade, which is, interestingly enough, former Vojas club, where he averaged insane 30.7 points per game in a 40 minutes game. I'm talking about Radivoj, not Voja. I don't know about Voja's averages. Okay, so in 1964-1965 season, his OKK Belgrade was a champion of Yugoslavia, and he played 2 EuroLeague matches against Swedish champion Alvix. He scored 71 points in the first match and then 99 points in a rematch. This record still stands in the EuroLeague history.
99 is a bummer, though, man.
I got 99 in a 40-minute game.
It's just 49-point triple-double. It's just a little disappointing.
Yeah, so no threes and 40-minute game. Come on, man. 99 points.
Get 100. Come on.
Interestingly enough, his EuroLeague average for his career was 43.6 points per game. He won 6 medals for Yugoslavia in the Olympics, World Cup, and Eurobasket. All of them, most of them were silver medals. That was the time before Yugoslavia really started collecting gold medals on the big scene. That started in the 70s. Unfortunately, he died in a car accident near Sarajevo on June 2nd, 1969. He was only 30 years old.
Man, a lot like Dražen Petrović.
Very, very similar. Very similar story, like Dražen. And since then, there were no basketball games in Yugoslavia on June 2nd in honor of his.
Oh, wow.
This is actually the place where he died on the road near Sarajevo. He was I believe he was traveling to meet his teammates for a national team game in Sarajevo, and he just never arrived to the spot. So the Serbian Basketball Cup, which is the equivalent of the in-season tournament that is going to happen in the NBA too, is called Žućko's Left Hand because Žućko was a left-handed sniper, and you can see the trophy in this photo. So, yeah, before
that's
that...
That's a cool name for a... That's like the Larry O'Brien, but it would be like the Larry O'Brien left hand.
Yeah. Actually, before that, the second best European champ tournament after EuroLeague was also called Cup of Radivoj Korać, but then they changed it after like 30 years or something like that. So that was basically the story of Sombor's own Radivoj Korać Žućko.
I love it. That's a great story. So it's interesting. Sombor, a little factory of superstars. Before we get out of here, I'm going to ask you one question, and it's not on the docket here, but we're going to talk about this tomorrow, either on the pregame or postgame or maybe both. But I don't know if you heard the Keeping It 1000 podcast with George Karl this week. He slipped it by me the first time, and I didn't respond, so he felt like he had to say it a second time. Like when you're hosting, you know how it is. Sometimes somebody will say something at the very end, but you're just focused, you're reading notes or doing something. I missed it. He says he expects... Like, he predicts, not that it's possible. He said he predicts when it's all said and done, Nikola Jokic will be a top 10 player in NBA history. Not a top 10 player currently or of this era. In NBA history, when you start to think about what that means, he's passing up a Kobe, a Curry, a KD, a Shaquille O'Neal. He's the names that he – that George Karl, one of the sixth winningest coach in NBA history – predicts. It's pretty what's your reaction to that?
George is turning Serbian, man. there's nothing else to say about that. I mean, do you think I'm higher or lower on Jokic than George? I mean, come on.
Look, the advanced stats suggest that it's within the that George is just saying what the advanced stats clarify, but let's be honest, man. To be a top 10 player of all time, you don't just have to be great. You have to do great things on the biggest stages. And, you know, we've seen Jokic be very, very good in the playoffs, but that's predicting some pretty lofty things for Jokic ahead, not behind.
You have many Serbs in your DMs and in your mentions, so you maybe already know this, but a very annoying thing about the Serbs is that we call ourselves jokingly, but also not really jokingly, the heavenly people. It's a part of the Inat origin. In spite of all the adversity, we will prevail at the very end because we are the people that came from the skies.
Yeah,
that is the reason why I will never be satisfied with Jokic being the best player in basketball for only one or two seasons. Come on, man. I want him to become the GOAT. Is that reasonable? Of course not. But who cares?
Yeah, who wants reason? Yeah.
Who wants reasonable? I already spoke before about Djokovic becoming the best tennis player of all time. That I think that was fueled by everybody in Serbia wanted him for that to become. I said I don't think Nikola has that kind of size of Inat in himself. But man, that second half against the Clippers. That like 36 points in second half with 5 assists and 10 rebounds. But what was it? That's unstoppable. So yeah, I know it's completely crazy. He would have to play for another 13 season to be eligible to speak about top 10 player all time. But I can see it statistically at least. He is top 3 for me.
Three things have to happen for him to reach that level, because right now he's unguardable, but there's another level of unguardable he can get to, and there's three things to me that he can do. One is he has to get meaner. I mean, that Clippers game, he became mean. I mean, he was screaming. Yeah. He was intense. He wanted to make a point, and he does that at times, but I want him to be – this is what Michael Jordan was. Every night, practice, he wanted to do this, right? He wanted to beat down his own teammates in cards. Like, Jokic just doesn't always have that switch. It flips at times, and we see it, but it needs that more. The three-point shot, I think that Jokic right now is a good three-point shooter, but it's his counter. If the three-point shot at some nights can actually become his go-to, the way it was for Dirk Nowitzki, where Dirk Nowitzki wasn't using his – three-pointer or his jumper to set up other things, that was his go-to. You had to play up on him. If Jokic gets to that, we're seeing his off the dribble moves get better and quicker and everything else. But right now, if I'm guarding him, I'm daring him to shoot and closing out on him. If you can get to the point where that's no longer an option, then, you know, where he's a Dirk Nowitzki type quick shooter, to me, that then it's a game over. And the third thing is, I think he has to become a better leader. I don't know that you can be a top 10 player unless you have some type of leadership to you that Jokic is still, in my opinion, developing and a little bit behind. And by the way, when I say developing, I'm not sure he actually wants it the way he needs to want it. But that's the thing. If he becomes that as well, those three things, then are you kidding me? I think the Nuggets win several championships if he can unlock all three of those things.
Yeah, those things go together hand in hand. Yeah. I agree.
Thank you guys so much for tuning in, Miroslav. This was fun, man. I might have to kick Voya off the show. You get Wally pipped. He's out of here. No, Voya will be back next week, guys. I hope you guys are tuning in and subscribing. This one will go up on the podcast, probably not for a couple hours, because I got to, like I said, I got to go on a date. But after that, I'll have the show up, and we're doing this every single weekend with Miroslav and Voya. Thank you guys so much. Have a great weekend, and we'll see you next time.